Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn, and with me in the studio once again, UNCW Professor Larry Cahoon, Bald Head Island Conservancy Executive Director Suzanne Dorsey, and Duke University Professor Doug Novacek is joining us by phone. We're talking about seismic testing off the coast of North Carolina and what it could mean to marine life. If you have a question for our science panel, give us a call, 910-343-1138, or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. Jack from Hampstead, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you, Rachel. I'm very pleased to hear your panel give a lot of discussion about creatures in the sea other than mammals and sea turtles. Certainly they are important, but in this consideration, as in Navy sonar matters, it's so easy not to think about the other creatures up and down the food chain and throughout their life cycle, because we know so little about them. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't be concerned in this as well as in Navy sonar. And the other positive thing I have to say is how very important it is, the work your panel is doing and so many other people in not-for-profit organizations and in universities and ordinary citizens like me in challenging this, because it's abundantly clear that our North Carolina Department of Environment and Natural Resources is not an advocate for the environment. It's sad to admit that, but that's the reality. So if people like these panelists and others, including many, many citizens, don't speak up, we're really in sad shape when it comes to taking care of the onshore and offshore North Carolina effects that seismic testing and ultimate exploration and development will bring.
Larry Cahoon.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for your call, Jack. Larry Cahoon.
I think the caller makes a very good point. There are lots of other organisms out there that matter to us. For example, Hampstead hosts a spot festival every fall. Well, spots are fishes that spawn offshore out near the shelf break, which is the area that's being proposed for oil and gas leasing. Those spawning grounds are not poorly, or are rather poorly known. But the same is true for a number of other fishes that we harvest here in North Carolina and that have recreational and commercial value. The point is there is an economic value to us from many of those resources offshore. Matter of fact, I'd argue for all of them. People fly here from Europe to go look at birds off Cape Hatteras. We have a wide variety of economic activities that are directly involved with offshore resources. And I would argue also that we need to think more inclusively about ecosystem services and ecosystem assets and try to put value on those. The arguments that we hear in favor of offshore oil and gas development are largely economic ones, and that's fine. But we can argue in the same language about what the costs would be as well as the benefits.
Larry Cahoon, to be clear, are you talking about putting a dollar value on environmental resources?
Yes, that can be done. The example that we use all the time is when you want to build a bridge, you're going to destroy some wetlands. Well, we charge you for that. Wetlands are worth anywhere from $40,000 to $100,000 an acre. That's part of your cost of doing business, is to mitigate for that destruction. So we can apply the same principle to offshore resources.
Suzanne Dorsey.
Right. And as I mentioned before, we are able to do that in terms of impact to our tourism economy with sea turtle conservation. I challenge any Wall Street executive to beat the return on my investment when at the Conservancy we invest $200,000 of private donated money and get a $30 million return on that investment annually. So I do feel very strongly that there is an economic argument to protect these resources, certainly charter fishing. I also would argue that, you know, to our friends in Raleigh and Charlotte that come down to our coast and spend their beach vacations here, how do they feel about the quality of their experience decreasing? So if you have oil washing up on our beaches and you have to wipe down your feet with baby oil like you might on the West Coast, would you choose another beach? And just a 1% decrease in people coming to our beaches could mean a $30 million loss for our coastal economies. I do want to say, Rachel, just in defense of our folks in the government, that their rules really limit their ability to make comments. So it does sometimes feel like they're not doing enough. But I do want to assure you that in my experience, to the extent they're able to, these are hardworking people trying to do their jobs. And just as a point of specific example, the secretary of the Division of Coastal Management didn't have to, but he approached the federal government and said, I want to have an opportunity to comment on the consistency of these seismic testing leases. The government looked at his argument, agreed with him, and gave him the opportunity to look at it as it relates to fisheries. That consistency statement will come out today or tomorrow. So there's somebody going above and beyond to try to make sure that North Carolina is represented.
And Suzanne Dorsey, as a member of the Coastal Resources Commission, what can you tell us about what's likely to be in that consistency statement?
Well, the federal government precluded comments on anything other than fisheries. So a lot of what Doug and Larry have been talking about will be considered. Now, the federal government only allows the Division of Coastal Management to comment on issues that they have rules about. So that narrows down what they can say in terms of impacts. So I don't know what to expect, but I do think that your state government is trying to represent you.
We have a tweet. Rusty Prater tweeted, concerned wildlife interference, right whale migration, et cetera, could be a major problem. I want to get back to this issue of economic impact, though, because one of the points that Governor McCrory has been making and that he made last week on Capitol Hill as a member of the Outer Continental Shelf Governors Coalition, he is working on a revenue sharing agreement, and this is with a number of other governors from other coastal states. And Larry Cahoon, you've been more than dubious about the reality of whether a revenue sharing agreement for North Carolina would come to fruition. Why are you so doubtful about that?
Well, I'd like to hear the economic argument and the legal argument for it. It is true that in the Gulf of Mexico, four states are deriving some revenues from offshore energy and development. That's a consequence of a law passed in 2006 by the Congress and signed by the President called GOMESA, the Gulf of Mexico Economic Security Act. And it provided for compensation for onshore impacts of offshore energy development. North Carolina doesn't have any onshore impacts at this point. And it's not clear that we want a large amount of that either. So I'd be curious to know what the argument is for being compensated for something that hasn't happened yet. Bear in mind that every dollar that the federal government shares from its revenues with North Carolina is a dollar that the other states don't get.
Suzanne Dorsey.
The other concern is not only just sharing it in North Carolina, but within our state, where will that money go? Will it disappear into Raleigh, or will it be used to mitigate impacts on the coast or at least help with beach restoration issues?
And I do want to get to mitigation practices in just a moment with Doug Novacek. But first, we have a caller, Darlene from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi. I just have a question. If the panelists could give the listeners, and if you could possibly post on your website, a consolidated short list of organizations that, without being bombarded to raise money, are battling this head-on at the national and state level to oppose seismic testing and offshore drilling.
Suzanne Dorsey.
Yeah, we have a fact sheet, Darlene, on our website, and it contains ideally an objective analysis of organizations and information about this issue. But I think you're starting to see more and more local governments come out against this, and I encourage you to talk to your local government representatives. The other industry, Darlene, that you should really think about is our tourism industry, but maybe more importantly, our real estate developers. Our real estate developers have a lot of pull in Raleigh, and it will impact. We're talking about a potential $636 million to $4.7 billion impact on coastal real estate prices. There's an industry out there that should have something to say about this.
Is that helpful, Darlene?
That's a great answer. I think she's got a good contingent there.
All right. Thanks so much for your call. Doug Novacek from Duke University, you wrote a paper based on your experience in the Gulf of Mexico on best practices, on responsible practices for seismic testing. Can you tell us about some of those practices and potential mitigation measures?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for that. I working with a group of colleagues, it was partially based on the Gulf of Mexico, but also based on some work we've been doing in the Russian Far East, actually off Sakhalin Island, which is just north of Japan. And there's a highly endangered species of whale off the coast there, and there's quite a lot of oil and gas development. But basically what we did was we outlined a series of elements that, certainly not universally applicable, and there are differences in terms of oceanography and things, but the elements start with the planning. And what do we know about the area of concern or the area that is targeted for the development, and things like what's the baseline ecology and the ecosystem and what services it's providing, as we've been talking about. And if you don't have that information, how can you possibly calculate a potential impact? So it's a little bit like the governor saying, well, we know 40% of the energy is inshore of that, but we're going to go ahead and explore anyway and see where it is. So getting a baseline of information about the ecology and those species is a big part of it. Then we move through a series of planning exercises where you want to minimize the area that is actually explored, and that can be done and was done off Sakhalin to minimize the amount of energy going into the water from the seismic surveys. Also minimizing the source array itself to what is absolutely necessary. We certainly, as far as the animals go, the most important thing is, to me, is the time area closure, so that we are not operating in an area where we have estivating turtles or some other species, which may be hard off Cape Hatteras, because I can tell you that there are pilot whales and sperm whales and beaked whales out there year-round, and some of them live there. So, we come back to this that issue. But then we also have the actual mitigation measures at the time of the survey, where we want to make sure that certainly that animals are not harmed or injured, but we also want to be looking farther out from that area to see what impacts we may or may not be having somewhere out away from the ship. And also a very important thing that we stress is that when you're doing this, you're collecting information, and information is being collected all over the place. In the Gulf of Mexico, for example, every day, where there may be 10, 12 seismic vessels operating on any given day. And the information that's gathered should help us to think about some of the impacts that we're having, but that information is not being brought to the table. So we try to go from sort of soup to nuts, if you will, from the early stages of planning and understanding the area where you want to operate, right through to what do you do with the information afterwards, and a transparent process for moving forward.
So, Doug Novacek, if you were king of the world, how much time would you want to collect this information before anything started happening?
I think we could make great strides in 5 to 10 years in understanding things like the Hatteras Point and the fish species and how much the turtles are using it and how many mammals are there. We have pretty good information on that already. But as much as it is collecting, individual pieces of data, it's understanding how and if it's going to happen, how we can do it in the most sustainable and responsible way. But I think that there's, between the pelagic deep diving species and the highly migratory fish species, we need at least 5 years, probably more like 10 years, to really understand how to do this responsibly if we're going to do it.
And we have just a few minutes left in the show, but there are a couple of policy changes that are on the table here with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Fisheries. They've proposed reclassifying humpbacks into 14 distinct populations and then removing 10 of those from the endangered species list. And there's also a proposal, isn't there, to expand critical habitat for North Atlantic right whales. Are those two diverging ideas, and how will that impact what happens with seismic testing here on the East Coast? Larry Cahoon.
Oh, gee. Well, I'm not the marine mammal expert here, but taking the second question first, Atlantic right whale is the most endangered large whale out there. They have not recovered very quickly from the low population point. They stay close to the surface, they swim slowly, and they get hit by ships a lot. They also spend a fair amount of time off North Carolina, migration route for them and so on. And so as I understand it, the proposal is to expand the area of environmental concern for them to include portions of the ocean off North Carolina. With regard to humpbacks, they're doing rather better. And so I'm not surprised that looking at subpopulations and identifying the ones that are still in trouble and separating those from the ones that are reproducing well is going forward as a proposal. I couldn't tell you which population was which. You might ask Doug about that.
Doug Novacek?
Yeah, thanks, Larry. I would go back to right whales. I think the humpback situation may be more than we have time to really get into and treat properly. But right whales, in addition to, as Larry said, them using North Carolina as a migratory corridor, there have been several new calves, mother calf pairs, that were sighted first and only off of North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And they use low-frequency sound to communicate with each other, those mothers and calves. And so we really need to be pretty mindful of what sort of sound we put into the water.
And just quickly, as you can hear, that's the end of the show music. If a mother and calf get separated, will the calf die?
Well, it's a nursing calf. When they're born, they're nursing. They nurse all the time. So if a baby mammal is not getting milk from its mother, things are rather bleak for it, in addition to the fact there are killer whales off our coast, and they do take young whales for sure.
Okay, that's all the time we have. That's this edition of Coastline. I'd like to thank our guests, Doug Novacek of Duke University, Suzanne Dorsey of the Baldhead Island Conservancy, and Larry Cahoon from UNCW. Thanks to you, our listeners. Join us next week when we check in with local business leaders on how the region is moving ahead with economic development recommendations. That's next Wednesday at 12:06 here on HQR News 91.3 FM. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.